Hello and welcome to a special World Series preview edition of the Pintcast. Joining me today is Martin. You can follow him on Twitter at HeisenbergCamp. How are you, Martin?
Very good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So now, Martin, along with being an Arsenal supporter, is also a big fan of the New York Mets. So it has been quite the postseason for him, and his team has done quite well. And now we're about to talk about a momentous occasion of them being in the World Series against the Kansas City Royals. Tell me a little bit about this playoff voyage for you, Martin, and what it's meant for the Mets to make this leap.
Yeah, it's really been a pretty magical year for the Mets. I remember talking with friends at the beginning of the season and saying, I think this is a pretty good team. They have a lot of young pitching, but they're not going to score a lot of runs, and it's hard to really see what they can do being in a division with the Nationals, who I thought then and probably still think may have the best roster, 1 through 25 in baseball. I think the expectation coming in this year was that we were going to see some progress. This has kind of been a long-term project by the front office, Sandy Alderson and Paul DePodesta, J.P. Ricciardi, a lot of the old sort of Moneyball A's guys, really all the Moneyball A's guys except for Billy Beane, have kind of been working to put this team together for a long time. And so I thought, everybody had some hope, I think, that we could be around the playoffs. But I think the general consensus was this team just wasn't going to score runs. And, that next year, 2016, was really the year that we thought we might arrive. So, it's just been kind of crazy. And really, for the first half of the season, the Mets, that prediction was sort of was pretty accurate. I think they were the lowest. They had the lowest run scored in the National League or something on July 31st. That stat may be wrong, but it's somewhere around there. I mean, they really were not a team that scored runs. But then, that trade deadline had a bunch of weirdness about it, that the Mets came really close to trading Wheeler and Flores for Carlos Gomez. And then obviously that fell through for various reasons, depending on who you ask. Flores was crying on the field. And in hindsight, that trade probably would have been disastrous, or certainly Gomez was not very good for Houston after they got him. But they managed to turn around and get Cespedes for they gave up much less for Cespedes. And they brought in Cespedes, who has been a superhero down the stretch. Juan Uribe and Kelly Johnson have both hit a little. Those were both trade deadline guys. And then right at about that same time, David Wright and Travis d'Arnaud came back too. And so all of a sudden it went from a team that had, very few bats. It was really just sort of Daniel Murphy and Lucas Duda, to all of a sudden being a pretty strong lineup. And then everything sort of took off from there. They swept the Nats a couple times and really ran away with the division. And, obviously this playoff run has been something else. The starting pitching has been unbelievable. And, Murphy is just on another planet at the moment. So, yeah, I mean, it's just sort of been a magical run the way it's come together. And, the Mets, I mean, I'm not going to say we're long suffering, but there has been some significant heartbreak in the last 10 years. The collapses in 07, 08, the almost making it in 06, seeing our ownership get dragged through the Madoff thing and got the franchise and waste David Wright's prime. It's just kind of been a really frustrating time since 2006. And I think it's a big market team with a large fan base. We've had to watch the Yankees and Cardinals and teams we don't like sort of go on and do all these great things. And so there was just a lot of pent up desire for the Mets to do well. And they're doing it. So it's just an incredibly exciting time. And sorry, that's probably a lot more than you wanted, but that's
that was great. That totally summed it up. Because like you were talking about the big midseason acquisition at the trading deadline. Picking up a guy like Yonis Cespedes, who has so much pop, and like you said, he's a superhero. I mean, the man has all the tools. And hopefully he'll be healthy enough to really contribute here in this series. And he says he'll be all right to play. He's definitely going to go. And you have a guy like Murphy who is, if you guys finish this thing off, he's going to be the new Mr. October, he's going to do pop maybe one more home run and we can give him that mantle. I mean, it's about time for that to be passed. And he killed my Dodgers and I was not very happy about it. But I mean, you look at the laundry list of all the pitchers he's teed off on now. you know, all the top three Cy Young candidates, you know, as well as many others. The amount of guys that he's been able to hit home runs off of, he's an elite company. And he's, you know, he's a guy who we know has always had pop, but I mean, this kind of ridiculous streak, I mean, this is what wins championships, when guys can put it together like this. So that's been exciting, you know. I think one big development that I didn't really see coming, you know, I saw other people talking about it, was, you know, the way Familia's developed into a shutdown closer over the course of the end of the season. You know, I was listening to something. I heard something, I think it was Buster Olney talking about it the other day, was that Familia started throwing more two-seamers, and it's something that he wasn't doing earlier in the season. And that he went to the, you know, to the management and the pitching staff to ask what they thought he could do more, is to throw that two-seamer. And the way he gets that thing to move down in the zone has made him a much more effective pitcher, and has turned into a shutdown closer, which, you know, at that trade deadline, I don't think many people thought he was one of the best closers in the league. So it's been a lot of development, and this has really come together well for you guys. In terms of starting rotation, because that's really where the bread and butter is. You've had these spot players, you know, really handling business here in the playoffs, getting key contributions from big guys. But where everyone seems to see the edge for the Mets is within their starting pitching. The rotation has been slightly tweaked for the World Series. Harvey is now starting Game 1, DeGrom Game 2, Syndergaard, then Mets. How do you feel about Harvey getting that first start on the road? You know, we've talked about he tends to be a guy that pitches better at home. And DeGrom has been pushed back to the Game 2 starter because of fatigue. You know, we saw less velocity in his last outing, and we think it's been taking a toll, probably by not getting enough rest. So what are your thoughts on the starting pitching and how it's going to do?
Well, yeah, obviously, the obvious caveat here is Terry Collins knows a lot more about what's going on than I do. I would have been, I think DeGrom probably would have been my Game 1 starter, just because I think he's a better pitcher than Matt Harvey. And, you know, even when he's essentially pitched three great games in the playoffs. He's won all three, but the last two, he really hasn't had his, like, great stuff. I mean, he sort of scuffled through Game 5, and the game against the Cubs. But, you know, that Game 5 against the Dodgers was a great example. The third or fourth inning of that game, which I know you watched too, I was sitting there with a friend of mine, and he kept getting in trouble and kept getting it out of trouble. And you could see him getting better and better every single inning. And so somewhere around the third and fourth inning, I turned to my friend and said, I think we're going to win this game. Because they, you know, the Dodgers have had
so many missed opportunities, man. Yeah. We got those early runs, and then it was once we got to about the fifth inning, and it was like three or four innings in a row where you got someone on but didn't do anything. It's just like I looked at my friends, like, we're fucking up. Like, you get to a guy who's this good and put these guys with one or no outs in scoring position, and then can't capitalize on it. Like, it's gonna bite you in the ass against pitching this good. And he found a way to stick it out.
Right, and I forget what the stat was. You probably saw it, but I think he threw 57 pitches with runners in scoring position in that game, or something unbelievable.
Testament to him and damnation to the Dodgers hitting with runners in scoring position.
So I think I would rather have him going in Game 1. You know, the flip side of that is, like you say, if the main three guys, if we say Harvey, Syndergaard, and DeGrom are the Mets' big three, which I think is right, I think DeGrom is the best road pitcher of those three, and whoever pitches game two is also going to get Game 6 if the series goes that far, which means, you know, that's the guy who's going to pitch two games in Kansas City. And so from that perspective, maybe it makes sense that you know, your Game 1 starter gets a start at home, your Game 3 starter gets a start at home. So, you know, at this point, Terry Collins has really made almost every decision correct in the playoffs. It's been sort of an unbelievable managerial run. I mean, I think that's right, although I just feel better with DeGrom on the mound than Harvey, because frankly, Harvey hasn't been great in the playoffs either. Honestly, Syndergaard's probably had the best stuff of any of them. But, you know, it's a nice problem to have, and it's a problem no other teams have, really, is just being able to talk about, you know, multiple aces, and then if Syndergaard and Mats are your third and fourth guy, it's an amazing problem. So I'm okay with it. I don't think it's what I would have done. I think I'd rather have DeGrom in there. you know, the other issue here is, you know, Harvey's had his little innings thing, this whole drama playing out the second half of the season. And really, when he's had to miss a start, I'd love to see the stats on this. I haven't looked it up, but I feel like he's really not been great after he skipped a start. And here he will have been pretty close to the equivalent, I think, of having skipped a start. So, you know, it's always that debate of like, do you want your arms rested or do you want them sort of sharp and not rusty? I don't know how that plays out, but it is something to watch for that he, if he comes out looking pretty rough in game one.
Man, it's the finest of margins how that works, you know. I've played with guys, the same kind of thing. They pitch on 8 days rest, and all of a sudden they're too jacked up, right? You see this, it's a back and forth. Sometimes they have different sorts of pitching. They'll pitch simulated games with a couple days to go so they can try to act like their bodies feel the same, but it's not an exact science, you know. Like, it's such a feel kind of thing that it's tough to adjust and see how that works. But, you know, I mean, I think the definitive edge, I think the reason why a lot of people are picking the Mets over the Royals is specifically the strength of starting pitching. And we've seen this, you know, in spades throughout this postseason. Sure, there's been a little bit here and there, but, like, you know, let's take a look over at the Royals. I mean, who do they have that's really going to do that for them? I mean, the guy they brought in the trade deadline, Johnny Cueto, has been so hit or miss. And the biggest thing you see with him, you know, so we have Volquez starting the first game, which I think is a pretty good decision. I think he's the best guy they got right now. And then they go to Cueto in game two, you know, once again, also giving him a home start because he doesn't seem to fare so well on the road as well. He seems like a guy who can be shaken and doesn't have the mental fortitude. I don't really know what it is, but this guy has shown, you know, Jekyll and Hyde shown us both sides so far in the postseason. How do you assess the Royals pitching staff?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I agree. I think the Mets have a huge advantage here. At least on paper, and I think it's really the one advantage the Mets have, so they've really got to make it count. But I agree with everything you said. I mean, I think Volquez is the one guy that I think is, a real kind of ace-quality pitcher. So it'll be interesting to see how he does against Harvey those two games. But, yeah, I'm almost surprised that they're pitching Cueto twice. To me, I think you'd almost rather have Ventura and Young be the games two and three guy and just have Cueto in game four. But, you know, Yost must like him more than that. And obviously, as you said, his home road splits are pretty dramatic. And they've set him up to where he doesn't have to pitch on the road in this series. But to me, as a Mets fan, game two and game six are games you're circling because to me, Cueto is probably the worst starting pitcher in the series, and I think DeGrom is the best starting pitcher in the series. And so, you know, at least on paper, I mean, all these are famous last words, but, you know, you look at it on paper and you just think that's a huge advantage for the Mets, and both those games are in Kansas City. Those are games the Mets should really be winning. And so I think those are the ones you really zero in on. And then, you know, Chris Young's kind of come out of nowhere this year. Obviously, he's been around forever. Used to pitch for the Mets briefly. You know, he's always just been one of those, like, solid number four starter guys, but his stats are really good this year. So, you know, it's either a sample size thing or he's just gotten hot or he's found the fountain of youth or something. But, you know, and I guess the other thing is that, you know, all those guys are right-handed. And so, you know, it's going to be a big opportunity and responsibility for the Mets left-handed bats because, frankly, a lot of the Mets right-handed bats don't hit righties great, especially David Wright has never hit right-handed pitchers very well. Cespedes can, but a lot of the other guys are pretty patchy. So I think it sounds like from what Terry Collins said at Media Day today, they're gonna use Kelly Johnson as the DH. So I think they're going to have five left-handed bats in the lineup. They're going to have Murphy. They're going to have Granderson. They're going to have Duda. They're going to have Conforto, and they're going to have Johnson. And so, you know, if they really want to get to the Royals starting pitching, I think, you know, it's going to be all right-handed guys. And so those lefties should have the matchups. And so, you know, Duda really had not had a very good playoffs at all until that last game. They finally broke out a little bit, but, you know, in some ways throughout the season, he's been the Mets. He and Granderson have been the Mets' big left-handed bats. So as much as Murphy's done in these playoffs, I almost think you really have to look to those two guys to touch up the Royals pitching a fair amount, because I'm sure we'll get to this, but, you know, that Royals bullpen is so good and so deep that if you don't get to the Royals starting pitching, I think it's game over. If they get to the seventh inning, that it's tied or they're ahead. So,
yeah, I think that's probably one place. Well, I think the Mets, I think you guys have a pretty solid pen as well. But like you're talking about, I mean, that's definitely the pitching strength of the Royals. You know, building from the back like that, and who they have, and those guys are all solid dudes with a lot of experience. Who are all great pitchers. And looking at them to shut it down. There's a couple stats. So I've been leaning towards the Mets all weekend, you know, ever since the results went this way. And that's just what I've been feeling. But I've been hearing a few different things. A couple stats that stood out to me specifically about the Royals. One, that they're the best. I mean, I've seen this kind of peppered around SportsCenter and elsewhere. That they're the best team at hitting, you know, high-velocity fastball pitchers, right? They have the highest average for anyone in terms of facing against guys throwing 95-plus. Which obviously works in their favor in that sense. I mean, just since you have so many young flamethrowers, which is, you know, such a great advantage in most matchups. So you have that, but then you also have the fact that they're a free swinging team. They saw the least pitches over the course of the season because they swing early, and that could really work against them, against a team like the Mets, who have such depth at starting pitching, but, you know, maybe not as much in the bullpen, but in terms of letting them get deeper into games, because an average start so far in the playoffs for the Mets has been about 6 innings. If you can stretch that and have your starters not hitting 100 pitches until the seventh inning, I think that's a huge advantage for the Mets. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a couple things there. I'm sort of the other way, and maybe it's just being a Mets fan and pessimistic and very worried. I mean, in a lot of ways, I think the Royals are a terrible matchup for the Mets, largely because of some of the things you said there. They put balls in play a lot. And while that's right, that means they don't see a lot of pitches, and so maybe the Mets starters could go 7 innings instead of 6 if they had a good start, which I don't love the Mets bullpen other than Familia. So getting to the eighth inning is a big deal, because I think Collins will use Familia in the eighth if we're ahead.
Sure.
But, you know, the thing that worries me about that the most is just that the Mets are actually not a great defensive team. And particularly, as we just talked about, Collins has decided to go with Kelly Johnson as the DH, which I understand you want to get that extra left-handed bat in the lineup against the Royals right-handed pitching. And again, he's made every decision right this playoffs. But, you know, the opportunity cost there, I think, is that you could have, especially if you're worried about Cespedes' shoulder, you could have put Cespedes at DH or Conforto at DH and brought in Juan Lagares, who, even though he hasn't been as good this year, you know, was a Gold Glove center fielder last year.
Right.
And that can make a big difference against a team that's going to be hitting a lot of balls in the outfield. So I'm a little worried about that, because as it stands, it's Cespedes in center fielder. And, you know, he's got a good arm, but doesn't have a great range and takes weird routes to balls sometimes. And then you've got Daniel Murphy, who's, you know, he's got a solid enough glove, but it really doesn't have much range. And then Wilmer Flores, he's mainly a second baseman, and he's only playing shortstop because your boy broke his leg.
Chase Utley is not my boy, all right? It's not, he may have gone to UCLA, but I still look at him like a Philly, so it's not.
That's right, know, yeah. So, you know, he's really the backup shortstop. Tejada's a much better defensive shortstop. Although, you know, and to their credit, all those guys have had pretty good defensive playoffs, really, but – so that's one thing that worries me, is just that I think the Royals like to they put the ball in play, and they're pretty aggressive base runners. And so I just worry that they're going to force the Mets defense to make plays and make that a factor in this series. I don't know if that really favors the Mets too much. You know, the other thing is that, you know, that 95 mile an hour stat, I have seen that. There's a lot going around in that. And there's certainly something to that, and it is worrying. But, you know, I would say in defense of all the Mets pitchers, I mean, they throw a lot of fastballs, and they all throw 95-plus. I think Mats has less velocity than anybody, but he still sits around 95, which as a lefty is pretty crazy.
As your fourth guy, you know, being the lowest of them all. Topping out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But, nice. You know, Jonah Carey from ESPN and Grantland had some stats. I just pulled them up here in something they posted today. So I credit him because I'm just cribbing this. But he said that, you know, this year hitters hit, they batted 176 against Matt Harvey's slider and 191 against Matt Harvey's curveball. Hitters hit 144 against Jacob DeGrom's changeup. and 184 against Syndergaard's curve. So it's, while all those guys throw a lot of fastballs and throw incredibly hard, it's not like those are their only out pitch. I mean, that's kind of the crazy thing about this staff is that, you know, it's not, these aren't, it's not just Kyle Farnsworth, you know, throwing 100 and not being able to do anything else. I mean, they've all got great stuff. And I will say, I mean, Dan Worthen, the pitching coach, and Travis d'Arnaud, the catcher, I think they do a lot of scouting and a lot of analytic stuff and prepare for hitters and they change on the fly. I mean, in some of those post game interviews, we talked about how DeGrom had a couple starts where he struggled early, and then settled in. And I think it was the Cubs game. He said, you know, they just noticed the Cubs hitters were all sitting on fastballs. And so they really sort of changed up the pitches they were calling. And he was throwing a lot more off speed stuff that worked in the later innings. So, you know, as much as you can trust something like that, I do think the Mets will have looked into this issue and thought about this issue a lot. And if they really think they've got much, if the advantage they get from having so many guys throwing hard is negated, I think you may see the Mets pitchers throwing more. You know, I think generally they throw about 2/3 fastballs, but you might see that number come down a little bit and then throw off speed stuff. And kind of use that as their out pitch. So, you know, it's just, who knows? And frankly, once the series start, all of this may go out the door. But, you know, I do think the Royals are a matchup that worries me as a Mets fan. But those guys all have, you know, two or three really good pitches in their arsenal. And I think they will be pretty smart about when to use them.
Well, now we get down to prediction time because we have to do that on the podcast. Regardless of the sport, we always give predictions. I'm going to go with the Mets in six. I keep flip-flopping in my mind, but, I mean, honestly, the pitching that I saw on display in these past two series is something I cannot ignore. You know, you've beaten the aces of each team, you know, some of the best pitchers in baseball this season, facing significantly less in terms of the starting pitching you see with the Royals. I'm going to go Mets in six. I think you'll close it out with your boy DeGrom in the sixth game. And yeah, maybe Mets fans get to rejoice. Hopefully, I'm not the. Hopefully, I'm not damning them.
All right. Well, I hope you're right. I'm going to go Royals in seven. Objectively, you know, just and maybe it's just that I don't want to jinx it, but I am very worried about the Royals. I think, you know, they came so close last year. They've got a lot of experience. Again, that they just have a shutdown bullpen. It's pretty unbelievable. And you know, I just think their lineup 1-9 is a little bit stronger than the Mets. So, you know, it just, I do think a lot of it's going to come down to the starting pitching because that's the one big area where the Mets have an advantage. And I do think it's a pretty significant advantage. And so, you know, obviously if the Mets play like they did the NLCS, then I don't think anybody can hang with them. You know, if the pitchers are pitching like that, it's just, I don't think anybody can do anything against them, but that was a pretty rare occurrence against a really good Cubs team. So I think it's going to be a good series. I honestly think it's pretty close to a toss up, but it's, you know, just really interesting. I like the Royals as an organization and they're a fun team and two teams with I think one of the most fun things about this series is it's two teams with really sort of strong styles and identities. You know, the Mets do have, like you say, it's all these young mid-20s flamethrower pitchers, and they're sort of brash and confident, and they're bringing New York back. And then, you know, the Royals were sort of the team of destiny. They came up just short last year, and they have this unique philosophy of, like, putting them all in play and making things happen. They're really proactive and have all those guys in the bullpen. So it's just two sort of, in some ways, completely opposite teams, and but both are great. So I hope it's a really great series. Obviously, I have strong rooting interest, but it's been a good playoff so far, and I'm looking forward to see what happens.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, I mean, look, if there's any way that the Mets can steal this game one, you know, get a good road start from Harvey, I mean, I think that's, you know, you'll have DeGrom to back that up. But look, if you come out the way that most of us would expect, let's say they go 1-1 in Kansas City, you have DeGrom win that game. You go home with that big advantage. You know, you take two out of those three. You probably have to win one of those on the road. after, I mean, it's like you said, it really is basically a fucking coin flip, which is fun. It's great. It's great for the neutral.
Yeah.
It's great for the neutral. You know, I'm still a little bitter at Kansas City for letting the fucking Giants win another World Series last year. So maybe that goes into my my pick a little bit. Not much. I mean, look, they're a great team, and I thought they were good enough last year to do it. But Bumgarner, we saw what happened there. Great pitching, you know, made it happen, and Bumgarner made it happen. And if you get that those kind of outings, if you get DeGrom getting those two, if they get those two wins, games 2 and 6 with your ace, that's it.
Right.
I think you guys will have it sealed. You know. Sealed up right there in game 6. So,
yeah, but yeah. Now that we're talking about it, I think you're right. If they can win, if the Mets can win game 1 with Harvey behind Harvey, and with DeGrom going in game 2, I mean that does sort of put a lot of pressure on Kansas City right away. So
hugely, yeah. And to have that whole home game thrown off, and then you have to face a guy like DeGrom. So exciting stuff. You were talking about. Good managing. That's something I wouldn't know a lot about being in LA these days. I'm very happy. Look, I know a lot of people love Donnie Baseball for what he did as a Yankee, but he is not the same manager that he was as a player. It now looks like the Dodgers are lining up potentially to have the buffest manager in the game with Gabe Kapler leading candidates.
Oh yeah. I saw that,
which yeah. I don't know what the fuck to think about. Cause look, I know a little bit about him as a player, but as a Dodger fan, you're looking for someone to come in, preferably that has some sort of experience, and most of the candidates they're talking about aren't really doing much. Do you see anyone that you would see as a good fit for the Dodgers?
Oh, that's a good question. I really hadn't thought about that at all.
And I didn't I didn't preface you. I didn't did not get you prepped for that at all. And what were your thoughts on Mattingly, though? If you need to think, well, what do you think about Mattingly, though, just from your external view?
I think it was the right move to fire him. Yeah, I'm not a fan. It's always a mysterious thing about what makes a good manager versus a bad manager, because I think there's so much behind the scenes stuff, and it's such a different job than coaching in any other sport, because if you're a football coach in the NFL or college football, so much of your job is getting your guys amped up for a game every weekend, and it's really just sort of this. You make sure they peak at the right time, and you got to get them ready to run through a wall for you. And baseball is sort of the exact opposite, because you're playing literally every day. I mean, it's like the job a lot of us have. Like, guys, you got to get up and go there every day and
do
your
best. It's a grind.
It's a grind. And so I think a big part of baseball is just kind of having a steady hand and being able to just keep an air of professionalism, keep everybody focused. And so maybe Mattingly was good at that. I mean, that's the stuff we'll never know who's good and who's bad at.
Well, that's what we heard, that he was good at those certain aspects. And he was a good, he was a good guy. People have always looked up to him because he's such a great player. He's always had a lot of respect. But the big thing is that when it came down to big decisions, pitching moves, late inning stuff, over these past few years, it's been time after time in playoffs, key games, where I feel he makes the wrong move. And that's, like you said, he could be great in all those other facets of the game, but when it comes to making great decisions late in important games, I don't want him making that call. I know that
awful. I mean,
with the new front office, they probably see a little differently. They want to bring in their own guy. You know, you have Friedman who comes from the Rays, who probably wants to institute someone who's more willing to work directly with his philosophy. Maybe that's why Kapler is the front runner. He's already been working with the organization, and maybe he's bought into their philosophy. But, I don't know. Would it be crazy to see someone like a Dusty Baker or a Mike Socha, a guy who's an experienced manager who may have won something, to go and do something like that? Or is that kind of crazy talk? Do they need to go with a younger, like, next generation kind of manager?
I mean, I would say Dusty Baker is crazy talk. I think he's a pretty bad manager. Although, again, he's made the playoffs all 3 of his stints. And plus, I really want Dusty Baker to get hired by the Nationals, so you guys can't have him. Like, supposedly he's interviewed twice, and I'm really keeping my fingers crossed that he's going to get that job. It depends. I mean, Mike Socha did a lot of good things as the manager of the Angels. I do think what you really want is sort of some sort of organizational harmony, where, if you've got that sort of muddy ball, or, I mean, that's such a buzzword, but if you've got a really analytics focused front office, It's got to just be maddening for them to watch a manager who plays small ball and messes, like you said, he messes up their bringing in relievers all the time. He messes up pitch hitters all the time. I mean, that.
Yeah.
I was watching that.
Definitely your head desk type situations multiple times, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Terry Collins is like a great manager, but I think he's a pretty good manager, but it just seemed like he was managing circles around Mattingly in that series. I thought so anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I get, I'm generally pretty analytics focused. And so my inclination is to say, bring in Gabe Kapler, bring in somebody like that who understands matchups, who understands platoon splits, who understands that small ball generally doesn't work, except in certain rare situations that you do need to play this Earl Weaver baseball and play for the 3-run homer. It just, your run expectancy goes way up. But, I think that's right. You can find a guy who makes all the right in-game moves. But again, my whole thing with managing has always been, and I think that half of the job is done behind this curtain that none of us will ever see. And we've seen guys, these sort of analytics focused guys who were supposed to be the next big manager come in and just not really win. We've seen it in Boston and some other places where, guys come in and it's just, there's a lot more to the job than that. And they seem to lose the clubhouse and, things just go south. And we don't know if it's their fault or something else. Like just four guys happen to have a bad year, but, I don't know. I'm generally of the opinion that managers probably get too much credit and too much blame for everything, but I do think the Dodgers made the right move there. I mean, even though obviously he made the playoffs, but you know, when you spend $300 million on a team, I didn't think he was good enough.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's an expectancy, and this is something that now is kind of exclusive to a couple jobs specifically. You know, jobs like the Yankees and the Dodgers specifically, where you've had the highest payroll in the league. And this is something now the Dodgers have had the past couple seasons. It just like it goes with any sport. I mean, if you have a team that we've seen it in football and soccer and everything, where if your team has the highest payroll, you spend the most money, the expectancy is a championship. And if not a championship, to be contending for one, which means making a World Series, which means being in the NLCS regularly, as opposed to just barely making the playoffs. That's not good enough when like, and that's plain and simple facts. If you spend that much money, there are different sets of expectations, and that's what we expect to see. Look, LA is an entitled market who thinks they should win everything all the time. But look, when you're spending the most money, we're used to teams that deliver championships. Sure, the Lakers aren't great right now, but that's always been the standard. When you spend the most money, you have this team, you have Phil Jackson, you have the stars, you got to go win. I mean, hopefully they can find someone to bring that along and hopefully return to, well, I mean, I guess we have winning ways, but in terms of actually winning when it matters. But look, to your point, I mean, it's really tough. Like you said, I mean, managing a clubhouse to balance, like you said, these analytics and the different way of looking at this game while still garnering the respect of all the players. It's a tough situation because they want a guy who's a baseball guy through and through. No jock wants some nerds coming in telling him how numbers are going to affect and change the way their game goes. So it's going to have to take, like, I to your point, I mean, I think it may take someone in this new evolution. Look, Gabe Kapler's 40 years old. You know, he was just playing a couple of years ago. And so maybe that, like you said, maybe that's what they need. Maybe he knows enough about this new side of the game to be able to take that and implement that, even though he's been a baseball guy through and through. It's going to be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see how it develops. And it looks like the National League for the next few years has a few new powerhouses that are going to be tough to unseat because everyone's been talking about, everybody thought the Cubs were a year away and then we thought they were here. You know, the Mets were a year away and here they are on the brink of possibly winning a World Series. And you got the Dodgers and the Giants and others with all this money and all this talent. So,
and the Nationals, yeah.
And the Nationals, right. You put a competent fucking manager together and like you said, you want Dusty to go there so he can fuck it up there for them as well. So,
yeah, I mean, as I've been saying all year, the Mets really should vote Matt Williams a playoff share. If they had had a better manager, that race would have been much, much closer.
And, you know, and I can't help but see parallels between – look, and it's a little harsh because, well, you know, Matt Williams got manager of the year last year, apparently a fluke.
Which is amazing, yeah.
But, you know, you got a guy like Matt Williams, you got a guy like Donnie Baseball, who were these icons, some of the best players of their generation, doesn't translate to success as a manager. You know, I mean, it's just the age-old adage and that we see across all sports, so I don't know.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's a little strange because I do think there's a mentality But the old school mentality, quote unquote. But at the same time, you see guys like, you know, like Terry Collins. I don't know that he's like the sabermetric ideal manager or whatever, but generally just makes, like, he understands the value of analytics and works with the front office. You know, I mean, I think Art Howe with the Oakland teams, the Moneyball teams, was like that. And Tito Francona and Joe Madden. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys aren't necessarily young guys. They're just guys who can see the value in it. I think,
yeah, well, and they're willing to listen. Fun. They're willing to listen, which is a
exactly.
big, which is almost as important.
Right, exactly. And so I think that's the key thing. I mean, I don't think it necessarily has to be a young guy, but it's, you know, if you get a guy like Dusty Baker and, like, he's not going to listen to anybody.
That's
just not the way he does things. And again, he's a guy that came really close to winning a World Series. So, and made the playoffs with the Cubs and the Reds. So he's won some places. And again, maybe there's a lot that he does right. I just think his in-game decisions are bad and would be a bad fit for a team that really wants an analytics focus. He ruined myriad young pitchers' careers. Which was horrible. And he, you know, he'll always play a veteran over a young player, which maybe, gosh, if you're the Dodgers and you could spend that much money, you can get away with. But
yeah,
you know,
but I think that's changing with, yeah. I mean, like, you see there's a slight, we'll wrap this up really quick, but there's a shift in the Dodgers clubhouse. It's going to be a much younger team from this year on. There's a whole load of veterans that are going to be shipped out, hopefully more than just the ones that aren't under contract anymore. There's still some contracts on the books, man. Shake your fucking head. But guys like Corey Seager is going to be our everyday shortstop. You're going to have Jock Peterson out there. You have youth coming through a lot of these positions, you know, second baseman, Urias, I think, is coming up soon, starting pitcher.
Right.
So yeah. there's a lot of youth that can be developed, and it's going to be really key as to where we just choose to pick up these veterans to give us the right added punch in those different places. But look, it's an exciting season to come up next year as well, but we have the World Series first, Mets versus Royals. I got Mets in six. Martin's got the Royals in seven, hopefully to do a reverse jinx so his boys win it in the prediction that I said. I think that's his choice.
Wait, absolutely. Yes.
If you are at the World Series, Martin will be there. He will – no, he won't buy you a beer. But it depends. If the Mets are winning, he might buy you a beer. Catch him in New York for games 4 and 5. Thank you so much, man. You can follow Martin on Twitter at HeisenbergCamp and follow him for all his thoughts on baseball, football, and everything in between. Thanks so much, Martin.
Thank you. Let's go, Ben.
wings and up a bit too heavy, we'll all float on.
Don't worry, we'll all float on.
All right.